Brass Tacks, good morning.
Morning, how are you doing?
I'm all right, sir, and you?
Okay, fine. I'd like to send Speedy Gavel wishes to the people in isolation, and particularly Ambassador Thompson, my favorite politician, and certainly Barbados's best platform speaker.
I like how you put that.
Okay, thank you. I've been tracking the numbers now, the COVID numbers, for a while, and I'm really impressed with what's happening. We're seeing some excellent numbers here. Now this is about 79 days since we had the first two cases. Now, I tend to take hereditary tree case test from the Trinidadians, because I don't think that would give you an exact indication of what's happening in Barbados. So they've done about 5,466 tests. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, 92 cases, that amounts to 1.6% for each test. This is an excellent figure. We're going under one, I guess, within 7 to 10 days. Now, you have the 7 deaths. That's 7.6% of the clients. You have 9 people in isolation. 76 recoveries. That is about 82.6% percentage of the recoveries of the clients. Now, another important factor is we've done about 1.95% of our population of Barbados. So you're heading up to about destined about 2% of your population, which is excellent again. Now, we had the last death in Barbados, I think it's about the 29th of April. So that's about 33 days that we didn't have a death. Not that we're looking for anymore, but that's just a fact. About 33 days since we had the last death of COVID patients in Barbados. Excellent again. So the figures are looking great. Now, I had a lot of people for some time now, 2 years, we're talking about the cabinet is too large. I give my little 2 cents worth on it. Now, I remember the Prime Minister made an actual speech about it. But she addressed the matter. Prime Minister Motley said the cabinet is relatively large because she's not only considered the mandate given, but also the scope of the work to be done. That's important. But also the scope of the work to be done. She also said the salaries of a few extra ministers are relatively insignificant, given that there will be tremendous savings on containment of corruption and wastage. I don't hear much people referring to the last section of that statement there, containment of corruption. And tremendous savings to do. We all know, even in West Indies cricket, that all the players have ratings. There's some A-rated players, B-rated, whatever. All ministers are not necessarily A-rated. Now, another significant point that all people are missing. Now, you had, in the last administration, you had 17 ministers, but there were only 16 MPs. There were only 16 MPs. So you had actually more ministers than things. You get a percentage of 106.2%. Now you got 26 ministers, 30 MPs. That's only 86.6%. So people must understand, as she rightly said, it's not a simple case of you got to look at the scope of the work.
What's the scope of the work, sir?
Barbados you see, even for the last 2 years, what we had to do, we had to restructure the debt.
Mm-hmm.
Barbados was on the point of collapse. Everyone know that, who understand what's happening, knows that. So it's tremendous work to be done. And we're going on up this COVID thing, but to add even more pressure on the thing. You always want more hands in a crisis or a catastrophe than in prayer. So I know you walk cutting the minister, know you got a catastrophe.
So let me say this to you, okay? Let me put this to you and get a response from you on it. The Prime Minister found herself with all the seats in the House of Assembly. You appoint a speaker, so that's one less. Then a member crossed the floor, so that's another one less. But you basically had the whole House to yourself.
Right.
You have some people with ministerial experience. You have some other people who are fairly young, who could be the future of your party, but they have no ministerial experience. It is my belief, and it's just my belief, that faced with that situation, one of the things the Prime Minister decided to do was to train the next cadre of people to continue the work of the Barbados Labour Party. So you give them ministerial experience, you give them ministerial office, you don't thrust an entire ministry that's heavyweight on them because they're green, and you back them up by giving them support with either advisors or consultants or the other things. What you're doing is training Peter Wickham, who is a political scientist and a pollster, I'm not, made the comment very early on that the Prime Minister had two things to manage, a political agenda and the governmental agenda.
Right.
Now, it is my belief that what was done was to foster the political agenda, which is keep the party together, make sure you train the next cadre, and the public pays for it. Which is why I made the comment to one of the previous callers that when you get to midterm, you then, especially putting forward a program that asks people to assist with your wages bill by changing the way in which they receive their salaries, it gives you an opportunity to then say as well, I have trained a few. I have seen a few who shows promise. I've seen a few who don't show promise. Here is what I will do. And make a political decision that will not undermine your political standing, will not give you too much trouble, put some people on the backbench who could grumble, but they got there on your coattails, so they really can't do anything. And you get the public to say, well, you cut the ministries and you get rid of the thing. That's how I see it from a political standpoint. And I am not a political scientist. I just watch politics. The point I am making is, or the point I'm trying to make is, how you dress it up and sell it to the public is what makes you a politician. So the heavy lifting and many hands, that's the dressing to make it palatable to the public. You can't come to the public and say, I get 20 seats, I could do what I feel like doing. Or I get 30 seats, I could do what I feel like doing. You don't like it? Lump it, wait until the next election and get rid of some of the dead weight. You don't say that. You find a way to sell it to the public. And the way to sell it to the public was, many hands make light work. We got a lot of things to do. And I agree. You may need one minister who could deal with the IMF. You may need one minister to deal with the unions. You may need one minister to deal with how you restructure the debt and the central bank and all that kind of thing, because that's their specialty. Perhaps that's what you need. The question is, how long do you need them for, and how long before you say, okay, we've achieved what they call it, mission critical. So for the next stage, I need less people on deck. So some of you, you know, give me the lifting from behind the scenes.
I agree. You both said about Wickham and what you said. Because as you said, when you said she did not only consider the mandate given. That is political, actually.
Of course, which is why I say you dress it up.
You got to deal with that. Mm-hmm. You got to deal with that, right? Mm-hmm. And then she said, the scope of the work. Mm-hmm. So, yes, so both of those statements will correspond with what you say and what we can say in probably that's what I would say as well. So you can't just, it's not a simple case of hollow. Oh, you got 30 people and this and thing. And then you also got a, I think you're bang on it.
The only thing I have to tell you, sir, is careful with saying how good we are with COVID, because almost every time you say that, somebody else is up and get it for some strange reason. I would like to see us actually go for like 2-3 weeks with no new cases, and that the number of people who are in isolation, you know, get down to 1, 2, or 0. I saw the, I think it was Dr. Best saying that the tests that sometimes come negative and sometimes come positive is something we need to have a look at and find out what's going wrong with that. And I still would like to hear, when we say we've tested 50 people, if that includes those who have been retested before they release from isolation, because it will let me understand how many new people are being tested on a daily basis. But thank you, as usual, for your statistical input. For those who like figures, it's always brain stimulating. Brastax, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson.
Yes, sir.
This is Mohammed Nasser. How are you?
Understand the voice. Yes, sir, I'm good.
Family all good?
Yep, they are.
I want to read three small excerpts in a book for you, and then I want to ask your question, say something. I'll go over this here. We Southern whites are the best friends the Negro has got, but we know what he really is. We know where he would go to, if our sustaining hands or constant pattern and examples were not ever present, cursing him to our way. That's one. Two, we truly believe in the supremacy of the white race. I believe that the white race give us the greatest possible form of government. No other race could have added to it. This government of the white man was not helped when the Negro began to vote. He will not make it better in the future. I believe that when this planet was created, the Almighty God personally turned it over to the white people. And one final one. There shall be no illiteracy amongst the white children. I do not mean any unkindness to the Negro children, but I do not believe instructions from books, from chapters and books, is in any way beneficial at all to the Negro. They have limited intelligence. Now, all that was said by white politicians, powerful white politicians in the United States of America. So I can ask a question here. You don't answer. I want anybody to tell me if they believe that Sir Hilary Beckles is a racist. Sir Hilary Beckles writes some of the most beautiful books, highly powerful books, a brilliant mind, brilliant man. I have about nearly 8 or 10 of them at home, and I intend to get all the rest. You know something? I've been taught that if you want to hide anything from a black person, you put it in a book. Now, Sir Hilary Beckles is the head of the academic brilliance in this Caribbean. You really believe, not you, Johnson, but anybody really believe that a brilliant mind like that put it in a book to hide it from the black people? He put it in the book so they will read it and research it and study it and work on it, but they will not. When I speak in this country, Mr. Johnson, even you that I have so much respect and thank for, don't matter me if you like what I say or what I say. It don't matter. What is true is that black people in Barbados better understand that their future of success in this country is limited. I hear everybody talking now about agriculture and even study a bigger article by Mr. Clark, very good article. People talk about bringing back industry and all kind of things. So let me say this. When Tom Adams took over this country in 1976, I think it was. Manufacturing and agriculture was doing very well in this country, especially manufacturing. We used to export and bring in millions of dollars in foreign exchange to this country. White people are not fools. They work out long ago the danger before it comes. They work out that with the success of black businesses in industry, the generation of wealth that they will generate will then feed them into other businesses and other projects. And they were successful in getting the prime minister of that time, Tom Adams, to shut down the opportunities that black manufacturers in this country had. And to this day, we are paying a price for it. And I want to say this to Barbados. This bread I told to you, there's no man in this country. And that includes the leader that I love of this world, Earl Walton Barr. There's no human being in this country that has made the sacrifice for black people that NASA has made. For us, was once loved by white people at a level that nobody could understand, and lawyers, doctors, all kinds of people were holding NASA. I didn't NASA, they're the husband. The best of everything used to get from them, help in every way. And I work out that my people need help, and they will never change, Mr. Johnson. The right thing is that we must get our unions and our civil service and our rich black people in this country to start mobilizing the resources towards the development of a balance. So it's not destroy anybody, but to bring a balance to this country economically. Otherwise, as bright as my children are, as bright as your children are, in two or three generations, have to bring us back. We will not believe the condition our grandchildren, great-grandchildren would be in. So that's why I don't want you, by the way, Mr. Johnson, I love you like anything because you're a brilliant mind and I know you're committed to good. But when it comes to principle, I don't compromise it for nobody. Barbados, black people are in serious danger of losing everything they have. That is my statement, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, and, sir. You know, always good to hear you, Brother Nassif. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Morning, Dennis.
Hi.
I have a suggestion here about the BOSS program. Now, an entity is going to float the bond issue and sell the bonds to whosoever will. Okay? After the bonds are floated and sold, well, the entity would have the cash. Now, for this month, June, Dennis Johnson, a public worker, receives $3,000 in cash. The government is going to deposit $2,500 in your account, and in the ledger, they are going to write, Dennis Johnson received $2,500 in cash and a $500 bond. A copy of that ledger will be sent to the entity who sold the bonds, and they would know that they have to pay $500 into Dennis Johnson's account. And for June, Dennis Johnson will have his $3,000 in his hand. The government will be able to go and show that they have reduced the bill by $500. And this will go for every civil servant. What do you think about that?
Sir, I do not deal in stocks, bonds, and issuing. So my feeling is, if you think that's a system that works better, if you think it can get the type of response that government wants, pitch it to them. I don't know. That's the truth. I know that in the past, government has offered all types of paper, bonds, treasury notes. Some the public subscribed to it, some the public did not subscribe to, and the central bank had to mop it up, or National Insurance or somebody. And we end up in the situation where we move money from the left pocket to the right pocket, which is why I don't know, sir. Which is why I said
we are not moving any money from the left pocket to the right pocket. The bonds will be sold to the public.
And if they're not sold to the public, what happens?
They're sold to whosoever. If people have money in the bank that they're getting less than 1% on, and some person is going to tell you that we are going to give you 5% on it, would you be stupid or not to buy? If there are entities out there who want to buy all the bonds,
sir,
and the ordinary people who want to buy the bonds, then...
Sir, right. And, sir, have you not heard people say that their faith in government is so shook that nobody should touch anything the government issues? I heard it up to yesterday. People say so. And then you end up with a situation where some people will buy it up. We would say all end up in the hands of one person. Or they're picked up by government entities, which has happened in the past.
Well, I think the credit unions, they put their money in the bank. So if they could get 5%, why they shouldn't buy the bonds?
That's a very good question, sir.
Guaranteeing that there wouldn't be anything like with the other government paper that the shave off money offer.
Sir, I telling you, I see no reason why they shouldn't either, but I didn't say that they will. I don't know. That's why I said I don't know if it will give them that, whether your plan will give the government what it wants. On paper, everything sounds like it could work. It's how you get it to work that will always be the challenge.
To whosoever wants it.
That you
have reduced the wages bill. The ledger will reflect that you have reduced the wages bill.
I heard what you said, you know. I heard what you said. Yep. I don't know, sir. Pitch it and see what happens. 434-1790. This is Dr. Brass Tacks. Hello? Brass Tacks, good morning.
I want to congratulate you for using your life experiences to be able to explain things sometimes that might seem complicated to the average person.
Thank you, sir.
And furthermore, I think that it is something that is a gift, and I think it's something that you could probably use to help the entire country, the average person at least, in being able to understand governance and government. Because the whole thing here is that a lot of people don't understand that the government is weak. And when we talk about creating and running a government, it is our collective needs that we are seeking to meet, as well as finding ways in how we're going to spend that money. And if there was a program that you could organize that allow people that are independent, I'm not talking about political persons or those persons that just pushing an agenda, but rather people that could come and discuss issues that would help the average person to understand how a small country like Barbados, that have been under colonial rule for years and then coming out of it, were given certain conditions under which they operated, which no longer exist. But yet we are expected to function as though these conditions still exist and that we could operate like bigger countries. It's important that the level of education of the average person be improved so that there could be better governance. And I think a person like yourself really have the ability to explain it, like what you did with explaining about the boss situation. It's a negotiation between individuals and the government. If they decide they want it, they will go ahead with it. If they decide they don't want it, then there's no agreement. So there's nothing illegal about that, you know. And then you went on further just now to point out, look, a government, a country don't just raise up leaders overnight. You have to develop leaders, and a small, fragile country like Barbados, this is economy that way, you have to train people to be leaders. They don't just happen, especially when you have limited resources. What do you think about that?
So, the challenge you will have, as I have said on more than one occasion openly, I have no problem saying it openly, a matter of qualifications. There are people who have asked me where I get this degree, what degrees I have, what gives me the right to say this, what gives me the right to say that, what makes me think I know everything, and various comments that rather than try to challenge what I've said or engage me in conversation, they do what is perhaps the easiest thing to do, strip me of my clothes and say, lucky naked. That's the challenge of doing it. Sitting here as I have sat for the last 25 plus years, I've tried to engage people, try to listen to them, learn from them, share my thoughts, share my experiences, and try to, as much as possible, engage in conversation. It has not gone down well with a lot of people. It has not gone down well with some. It has gone down fine with others. The challenge is putting myself in a position where I try to share my thoughts and engage people, and someone steps up to strip me naked in public. It kind of takes away the desire I have to try to make things better for my, for the people that I care about. And that's, so I said, yeah, so no, seriously.
That was set to vote to do that because they have their own agenda. But
everybody does.
Defender, and therefore, that is not something you have to worry about. Because I think that we are such a crucial point in our development that we need persons that could think independently and to be able to help educate the population on how we are going to go forward. For example, there are people that constantly come on the program and say manufacturing, manufacturing. Now, in a global economy where you are tied into so many agreements, the question is, can you get out, get out of the agreement? If you can't get out of the agreements, can you really build an economy on manufacturing? Can you build it on agriculture? What is your competitive advantage? Is it in something that you have control over? You know, and these are things to me that are very, very important for discussions to be raised on. Because unless people understand that they're going to keep running down the road with scarce resources that are unsustainable, and putting them in the wrong thing.
And again, sir, it comes back to, I take your point. I will say this to you. It's a case of which comes first, the chicken or the egg. Dean Straker, who, he's made this point on more than one occasion, one of the businesses, what the business he's involved in, for example, he talks about making uniforms. Right now they're making masks. And he says, look, I have people that I have to keep employed through this. COVID gives us an opportunity. While it has taken away the opportunity to make uniforms, we make masks. But people are importing masks, so we really don't have a market. They make uniforms, but people are importing uniforms, so again, the market is cut. So you have a situation where, depending on either government policy or how competitive your prices are, or a combination of both, the industries that you would like to build, it takes a while to get it built. For example, years ago, Trinidad wanted to assemble cars. To do that, the government had to put certain restrictions in place. They threw it away and say, you know, the second-hand car market is now open season, anybody could bring in. So the assembly plant now comes under pressure. You have a company like Ansa McCall that's now established as a giant in Trinidad, Barbados, various parts of the region. The gentleman started selling, his career selling washing machines. And looked at it and said, but, you know, I could set up an assembly plant in Trinidad and assemble washing machines and fridges. And that's how ANSA started. And it's grown into what it is today. But again, it takes entrepreneurship. It takes building the market, government policy, a combination thereof. If you had a situation where there was a thriving furniture manufacturing in Barbados at one point. I remember the days of Curtin and these guys. Excellent furniture, right? But two things happened. Imports from various Latin American countries that were cheaper. The retail stores sold them at discounted prices. They got better deals, paid down nothing. And more, the locally assembled furniture, people saw it as being too expensive and out of their pocket. They didn't see it as being heritage. They didn't see it as supporting Bajan. They did not see it the way my grandfather saw the furniture he built. that long after he died, I had to sandpaper it and varnish it every Christmas. And as far as I know, some of it still exists 100 years later. And people will pay money for it as being, you know, antique and all that kind of thing. But people threw them out to replace it every year with cheap.
If you go back to Mr. Hampton, what period was it? It was a period when, obviously, the Cold War was on.
Correct,
and the
correct,
world
correct.
Would have been different.
It forced and you into that position. Yeah, I tell you, understand the times. Correct.
Right, so unless you understand the times, you would think that you could go back there, but every time you decide to produce a product, you have to look at
the market as it is today.
What is the cost of production?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what is your market going to be able to afford?
Exactly. Yeah. And if the cost of production is too high, the end product will be high, which means your consumer, unless they're going to keep increasing wages and creating inflationary conditions in a small country that can't afford it, you're going to run yourself in trouble.
And sir, if you do not have the right type of marketing strategy, because that plays a big part in it, you have to be able to reach the people, and you have to give them, and you have to be able to give them quality way above what they require, because you're pushing your foot in a market where they have to learn to trust you all over again. I take some of the points raised by Brother Nasser when he talks about making sure, for example, you're building hotels in Barbados. You want to build Hyatt, Sam Lord's Castle is coming back. Now, take a project like Sam Lord's Castle. Because of the history of Sam Lord's Castle, if you decided to devote a building to the old memory of the castle, if you want to call it that, if you have a group of manufacturers who can produce period pieces for that particular building, for the creation of that particular look, or you want to build a Rachel Pringle's tavern and you want to give a local manufacturer the chance to build period pieces for that, that's an opportunity. But you have to take it and grasp it and run with it.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, then you get the hotelier saying to you, but you promise me it can be ready by the time we finish. We're ready to go. All my imported furniture in place. Where my bed sheets, you promised me, or where the, you know, four poster bed, you promised me, where the old chest of drawers, you promised me. And if we can't deliver it, we're reputation dead. Forget about it. We ain't coming back again. Because you'll be blacklisted for life.
Your workers just when Sam Lord's Castle start to build. You got to start training workers because you're training them to be for the international market.
Correct.
And not just the local market. And those kind of things.
Correct.
I really think that you should consider it, because I think that you are at a stage where at some point in time you might consider retiring, and there's a tremendous...
2 years from now. Sir, I will think about it. I thank you for challenging me again. I really will think about it. This company says by 65, I gotta go. If I make it to July, I'm 63. So I got 2 years and a couple months to think about it. I will think about it, sir. Because I really do, sir, I really would like to give this country a little bit back for what it has done for me. I've given it 3 children, but I think I still need to not give it more children, just give it a little more of me. I will take you up on your offer, sir, I promise. Brass Stacks, good morning.
Dennis Erskine.
How are you, sir?
Not too bad. What about you?
I good, man. I good.
I'm glad to hear you. I took you hear me stepping out to the kitchen. I'm not a cook, though.
Well, you washing pots?
I do the eating, and then I wash the pots after.
You do the eating, and you wash the pots. Good fellow.
Yeah.
Clean up. Clean up, man. Yes, sir.
You know, if you ain't good in nothing else, you got to be good in something.
Well, somebody got to think you're good.
Somebody got to be chef. Somebody got to be cleanup person.
Correct.
I called about something that has been, people have been calling me the past 2 days, from yesterday morning, this morning, about something that was said on another station on CBC. And I need to explain it to the public. Mm-hmm. But before I do, let me ask you a question. You agree that if I like you, Dennis, no one care what you do, you can't be wrong?
That's the way, well, I wish everybody would feel that way about me, but yeah.
No, you know what I'm saying? So it's like,
there's some people like that.
That is what turns off some people from something. Like some people who call who's a Dem and who's a B. This is Mr. Stacks, man. I mean, it's like, he shouldn't have called this morning, because you know what he said? No, because he can't defend the 27, 16, 17. And you've got to leave something. Leave it. Let people do what they want to do and talk about it. You understand? But he tried to defend that. Just like something, a friend, another guy there, Patrick comes to defend and say things and if somebody get authority on it. Anyhow, that's the only body there.
Leave it. Because they'll come at you. Leave it.
They can come at me, but I worry.
Good. So move on. Tell me what it is you're calling me about.
I want to clear up. Foolish fellow said he wrote, but the same way I see it, other people see it. Anyhow, good. When a fellow right, he right. When he wrong, he wrong. If you can tell him that he's wrong and he can't accept it, well, and you find out later on that something is wrong, you can apologize. What happened is this now, Dennis. Under the Motor Vehicle and Road Traffic Act, there has been an amendment to the 1952 Act and Regulation, and it states clearly that the driving instructor must be seated next to the student at all times when conducting lessons or whatever. Only when that person is doing reverse maneuvers, he's allowed to get out of the vehicle and watch them how they do it. Mm-hmm. This is the only time he's allowed to get out of the vehicle when the student is doing reverse maneuvers. It also states clearly that two persons are allowed in that vehicle. The learner driver, a separate learner driver in the back, and the driving instructor, the person who's teaching them, and then there's a separate student. The student must be the holder of a valid learner's permit. It cannot be your sister, your aunt, your niece, your nephew, nothing, unless he or she has a learner's permit. You understand? Mm-hmm. And they state in the back. The reasons for that is my organization, the Barbados Driving Schools Association, Winslow, myself, and Mr. Lashley went forward to government and we put the proposals to them and they agreed and they gave us some of what we wanted. One time you can drive in town. That's it, giving you a test and then giving you a syllabus. So they agreed that it's going to allow us to drive all over the country for a certain time. And we got that. I was part of that administration. We worked hard to get it. We worked hard to get this children in the back seat. Let me explain the reason for it now. It seems as this morning. That student who's seated in the back, who has a learner's permit, would be able to observe what is going on the road with the other student, and they recognize if the student made mistakes and the things that they might not see normally when they're behind the wheel. And not only that, it gives the person driving the vehicle the opportunity to get the feeling of that third person in the back who might automatically later be the testing officer. So it alleviates some of that fear that they have. Because you and I know, whenever you go on a test, you just be nervous. Yeah, those get very nervous and frightened. You would be surprised that a person give you 200% while learning to drive. Come on the day of the test and never wait to the bathroom 10 times before the test also comes.
Yeah, and they're nervous. Happens.
So therefore, that does not mean he or she cannot drive. But because of the situation at the time, they get that nervous. Let me give you the other part of it now. Mm-hmm. So if I come and pick your son up at 6 o'clock this morning, mm-hmm. and he's doing 1 hour, I can go for the other student, say you live in Jackson, mm-hmm. I can go and pick up my other student in Green Hill and somewhere else at 6:45 or 6:50, giving me time to get to your home and pick up your son mm-hmm. or the next person who's driving for 6:45, mm-hmm. 6:50, and drive them to wherever. I can change that student at 7:05 and allow the one that I picked up earlier to drive. That student now who's driving, I can pick up an 8 o'clock student before 8 and carry them along. And when their hour is up, they could change student. It might be fortunate for the student I pick up at 7 would be able to drive back home at 8. Or pick them up at 6:45 to drive back home at 8. Do not for 1 minute people believe, which it seems to be, they believe that they're using two students, doing 1 hour and getting paid for two.
For two people.
That is not what happened.
Or you're running a taxi service.
It's simple. It is not that way. Each person does his or her hour. Mm-hmm. At the end of the first hour, the other student takes over wherever they are. Okay. But this person who seems to have been saying that the student gets picked up at 6:45 and gets back home at 8 o'clock, they drive back home at 8. That means he had two people doing 1 hour. No, the person there was already in there from 6 o'clock. So that needs to be explained. Because there's a second student in there, you're not doing two students for
the same hour.
For two students for the same hour for double pay. That is not what it is. And juniors seem not to be able to explain it. and it caused a whole heap of ripple coming back to me. And obviously, they call the idiot all the time. You're asking him questions, and I have to answer.
Because you're the man that's talk about driving instructors all the time.
I'm the best there. You know? Yeah, that's my vehicle number one.
I am sending the bill to you, sir.
I take first, second, and third position. All the rest come after me. So therefore, when people come with things, somebody has to clarify it. So I'm doing it on the best station in the world.
Now you pay back the station with that ad for them. Let me say to you, however, that the optics will always be, I suppose, what drives comments. There are people who may have been burnt for whatever reason. They may have been told, I was supposed to get an hour, only get 45 minutes.
They could tell them about it. Should be man enough or woman enough. And if the father or mother see that this is, they ask the question. Now, my daughter left the house.
Boss, you know that too.
And she was behind the wheel. She was not
You want them to be, you want them to say that you're going to victimize the child and fail them and don't teach them properly?
No, you know that too. Then, like I said before, there is one and then there is the other. And don't expect everybody to be the same. Some people might very well do it. Mm-hmm. But if you're really worth, then you will do what is right. Fair. You need to be fair. You need to be honest. You need to be right. Then I know we have people who are not.
You see, here's the comment. That is not what is to happen, but we have some dishonest teacher drivers. See what I tell you?
That's what I told you?
I didn't have to look at the WhatsApp to tell you that that's the comment you would hear.
Yeah, I know. But you see, something that bothered me too, Dennis, not really bother, something that you look at. You know a lot of us hide behind people?
Yes, we do.
We hide. You know why we hide behind people? Because we are afraid to come out and speak the truth. People call WhatsApp. If I WhatsApp something, it's just to respond to a statistic that need to be clarified because they can't get in. But they got people that can get in, and they just sit down and pushing things, and then they won't come up to the front and talk it.
They won't.
You understand? And then there are people out there who will stop me on the road and say, Erskine, I want this thing done. I want when you call, you know this road, this place, you road, the next place, that thing, something I know. But let me explain it to you. And then when they finish, if you don't listen, then you get Mr. Blank. But then you listen, but let me tell you, I think it would be better for you to call, because supposedly the moderator asks me questions they can't answer. But that easy. But that time I know the road, you know.
Boss, I hear it all the time. I hear it all the time and twice as often as you, because I happen to be the host of the program. There are people who call me and say, I don't know if I have the patience to listen to them people, but listen to this, I got to tell you. And tie me up for an hour. So I get it twice. The WhatsApp message says, I just opened my door. There's a frightened puppy, brownish in color, lying on my mat. I'm at Eden Park South in Christchurch. Would the owner please contact me? My name is Beverly. I won't tell you Beverly's number here, but because all sorts of people may call Beverly that have absolutely nothing to do with a frightened brown puppy. Brastax, good morning.
Hi, morning, Dennis.
Hey, how are you, man? I haven't heard you. I know when last, but I know that voice, and so
I'm here calling. I'm not going to call Beverly.
Okay, if you say so.
First thing, I know. I think that you did part of the show. I did the show at the Lower Court when the guy from Trinidad, that pan, I think it was known as Single Man, Pan Man.
Yes, correct.
Panist. Yeah. I know one of his albums have on a song called Coffee.
Yes, it
is. That guy they're talking about. Mm-hmm. His name. That's the first thing I want to find it from you. His name.
His name is. Oh gosh, yeah. Come back to me in a minute. Go ahead.
All right, moving on from there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have a little concern each time. This will be a concern. There are plenty of your fans who are quite appreciative of your music style and your playing of music on Sundays and otherwise. And they've made one or two comments that I was not going to bring them on brass tacks. You know, they are good comments to you.
You sure?
There's something that can come off. I don't think Mr.
Fair enough. No problem.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, they think that when Dennis plays music, they wonder. They just wonder. And I just want to leave that particular one there. I let you fill in those blank spaces.
Fair enough, my friend. As soon as that name comes back to me, I'll let you know.